Leading LDS is a nonprofit organization dedicated to enhancing leadership ability and capacity of lay leaders in order to accelerate the mission of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Leading LDS is not owned nor operated by the LDS Church, and any opinions expressed on this podcast do not reflect the views of any specific organization. All donations given to Leading LDS are tax deductible and go towards the support of Leading LDS. For more information, visit leadinglds.org. You know, I love when I see a new email from our contact page at leadinglds.org because it's generally from a listener or somebody in the audience who's giving some feedback and generally is positive. But a few weeks ago, I got an email from Jake Carlson, who's actually a leadership development consultant and runs his own podcast called the Modern Leadership Podcast. And I love talking with other podcasters and hear about their journey and share our frustrations and just to hear about what they're trying to accomplish with their podcast. And Jake is LDS and been listening to Leading LDS and really appreciated some of the content that we've been putting out there and want to know how he could help. And as the more I talked with Jake and heard his story, I thought, you know, I'd love to have you come on and be a guest on the Leading LDS podcast. And most importantly, share about your experience traveling the world. Because just recently, Jake, his wife, and their three kids went all around the world and visited various countries, 12 countries actually in total, where 11 of those countries actually had a place to attend church. And they had a very unique experience, as you can imagine. And I feel like, you know, that's definitely on my bucket list, I must say, that I'd love to pack my family up and travel the world and experience the world, but also experience the church in different countries. And Jake definitely had that opportunity of seeing how the church is functioning in different countries. And I think there's a lot that we can take from that as leaders in the church, is just to understand maybe the uniqueness that people face in other countries that are trying to just having your typical weekly meetings. And not only does it help you, give you new perspective, but I think it helps you be grateful for how traditional maybe your church experience is in the United States or in a more established country that the church has. And so I sat down with Jake in this interview, and we just went through his experience. And Jake was also kind enough to submit an article, which I hope to post before this episode goes live, about a unique experience that he felt like the Lord was teaching him about the importance of his preparation and that he's not forgotten and as he prepares to serve and to lead in the church. And so in this interview, we talk about what the church looks like in different countries around the world and how it differed and how leadership differed, how the youth experience differed. And it's just fun in my experience talking about the church in other countries. So I wanted to share this with you, and Jake was so kind. I hope I have him on in the future. I encourage you to go check out his podcast, the Modern Leadership Podcast, and listen in, and he talks to some interesting people that would definitely enhance your leadership experience. Now, before we do that, as always, I want to encourage you to become a core leader with Leading LDS. We've been doing these incredible weekly webinars. If you haven't joined us at one of our Saturday morning webinars, they have been awesome. Such rich content that you don't necessarily get through the podcast stream. But the core leaders, if you're a subscribing core leader, which means you either give a dollar a month under a subscription donation or $12 or more a year, and it just is set it and forget it, right? Because one of the biggest expenses that a nonprofit has is retaining donors. And so by you know, I appreciate all donations that come in, but by you going in and setting up a subscription donation, we can set it and forget it and not have to keep reminding you, hey, remember you were contributing to this great cause we're doing, we need your help. But we can just jump into this together, know that those donations are coming, and focus on creating valuable content for the Leading LDS audience. So I encourage you to go to leadinglds.org and become a core leader by hitting the donate button. Now, here is my interview with Jake Carlson, the podcast host and world traveler. Today, we get to sit down through the powers of the internet with Jake Carlson. How are you, Jake?
I am doing excellent, Kurt. It's great to be with the Leading LDS folk.
Nice. Well, now you're in the group of podcasters, right? And so you have I have a special place for the hard work that goes into creating a podcast because and you know what it's about.
And most people don't, right? I mean, they think we just hit record and then it's done. But there is a lot of back end work. But I love it.
Nice. And what's the name of your podcast?
Modern Leadership.
Nice. That's my type of topic there. And how did you get started with that?
You know, I originally started out the Family Before Fortune podcast, which it was my dream to help individuals, mostly fathers that were transitioning from a job to a career, help them to build the life of their dreams with the people they love. And I was living in San Jose. You know, it's a very up early, work late, put the kids in daycare, two-income family type of scenario. And I wanted to show people that we could have the opportunity to build the life of our dreams without sacrificing those that we love. So I started that like 3 years ago, had 120 episodes before rebranding it as the Modern Leadership Podcast, which actually just expanded the ideas to a broader audience.
Nice. And I've listened to a handful of episodes since we've been first introduced. I think you produce a great product. It's generally just interviews that you find some smart gurus out there and ask them some questions.
You know, that's a great question because I love doing the monologue. I love to just get behind the microphone and stare up at my picture up on the wall and imagine the group listening and just talk. But I've had a lot of people reaching out asking to come on my show. And as I've started talking with them and developing that, I've kind of gained a reputation as an interviewer and people really like that. And so actually, Kurt, this is maybe a little disclosure on your podcast that nobody knows yet, but I'm actually considering going to 2 times a week, one as a monologue, one as an interview.
Oh, cool. Well, I've tried 2 times a week and gone to 1 time and you know, mixed up a little bit, but it, regardless of how you cut it, it's a lot of work, but it's worth it.
Yeah, it is. And it's so much fun. And I love preparing. And if I do go to 2 times a week, the one episode will probably be just 8 to 10 minutes, just a leadership principle. But then I'll keep the interviews around 30 to 40 minutes. Because like you, I enjoy talking to people from all over the world with different backgrounds, just different experiences.
Nice. And so how did you originally come across the Leading LDS podcast? Do you remember?
Yeah, I do. So we had just gotten back into the country after a year abroad, and some of our friends from California, from Utah, and from Iowa all got together, flew into Utah, which is where we landed, and we had just kind of an old friends get together, welcome back to the States. And they were asking how my podcast was doing, and I was saying, you know, it's doing great. I'm really enjoying it. They said, another podcast you've got to listen to is this guy, Kurt Frankum. He does a great job at Leading LDS. You got to listen to it. So I went home that night, downloaded a couple of episodes, listened to it, caught one that you had with the Art of Manliness or some company like that. Had a great time. Oh, it was a great interview. So I said, I got to reach out to this guy, see what he's doing, see if there's a way that I can serve him and his audience.
Yeah. And that's what's led to this interview. And also an article that probably by the time I publish this, I'll definitely publish it before we publish this interview, so it's out there and people can reference it before they listen to this interview or after, whichever. But you wrote a great article called In Lesson Preparation, The Lord Knows What He Needs. And you kind of use this to reflect on your time traveling to 12 countries in Asia and Europe. What on earth were you doing dragging your family around the world?
You know, sometimes even looking through the rear view, we ask ourselves why in the world we did this. But it was the perfect timing for us and our family. I had worked for 11 years in corporate America. I had worked as a tax attorney. I had done a lot of different things, met a lot of different people. But what I hadn't done is spent a lot of time with my family and given them kind of the one-on-one or the five-on-five, because there's five of us, experience that I felt like we needed at this time in our life, that we felt like would be the right thing in preparing our kids for their teenage years. So my kids are 12, 9, and 6 at this point. They were 11, 8, and 5 when we left. And it was just the right time for us to go and be together as a family. And so we made the decision. We sold everything that we owned. We put whatever couldn't sell, sent it to Goodwill, and took off. And just had the time of our lives. Started in Asia, ended in the UK, and on our way back to the States.
Nice. And, you know, I think there's a lot of people out there, including myself, who've sort of seen other people do this type of thing and thought, man, that would be fun. And then it only takes about 5 to 10 minutes to think about the logistics and, oh man, what a headache that would be. And I don't know how we would, with these kids, young kids, and how do we do that? But you overcame those and went for it.
Well, and the interesting thing is, and by the way, that is the number one question we get whenever we meet new people. And we just moved here to Arizona. So we're in a new ward and there's 550 members, and each one of them needs to come up and ask us what we were up to. The first question after they find out we were traveling is, how did you do that? And the funny thing about that question is the things that we thought were going to be the most difficult, that were going to be that took the most preparation, actually just kind of slid by. As a family, you know, you adapt, you adjust, you go through things together. Things that we didn't think we would have to face, well, we ended up facing all of those, and we learned a lot of great lessons through that. So it's very interesting. It wasn't easy. You know, preparing for this wasn't easy. We weren't independently wealthy. We didn't have a lot of money. Literally, we sold everything that we had, and that's how we afforded to pay for this trip. So we were working and struggling the whole way through it, just like any family out there would do.
Nice. And can you name the 10 countries that you actually hit?
Yeah. So we actually hit 12, and we started in the Philippines. And the reason we started there is because that's where I served my mission. And we figured, hey, if we're going to dip our toes in the international waters, we want to go somewhere that where we have at least a little familiarity. And so I knew the language, I understood the food. And so we decided to start in the Philippines. We spent a couple months there before heading north, and we went through Singapore, and then we ended up in Malaysia, Thailand, Myanmar, which is formerly known as Burma, Cambodia. And at that point, so that was our Asia trip. At that point, we realized we needed a little bit better Wi-Fi. If I was going to run my business and do my podcast from the road, we needed more reliable Wi-Fi. So we decided to head out west and head to Europe at this point. And we landed, and I got to tell you this, Kurt, my family and I, we lived in California. We live in Arizona now. There's one thing in common those two places have: warmth. We are not cold weather family. We landed in Prague, Czech Republic, on December 15th. There was snow. We were in shorts and t-shirts. We had flip-flops. Nobody had shoes. Nobody had coats. We really learned a lot about adapting and adjusting. But then we spent some time in Prague, went to Italy, Scotland, England, went over to Paris, France for the temple dedication, and then back across to the UK to Wales for the end of our trip, and then came home to America.
Wow. I can just imagine the life lessons you were able to teach your children as you arrived to some of these places, maybe unprepared in areas you hadn't thought through.
Well, and the great thing is, now looking back, I have all these stories that I can relate back to my kids, like, hey, do you remember when we did A and we learned B? And so it's been a lot of fun to kind of recap and look through pictures and kind of share those lessons learned, that sometimes when we're going through these experiences, we don't see them for what they are. It's only upon reflection that we really make sense of what is going on in our lives.
Yeah. And I'm just thinking of maybe that individual listening to this that thinks, well, that's pretty cool, but I don't have the funds or the ability, or, you know, again, not that you are independently wealthy, but they just don't see it working. How is there any a middle ground there that a family could create some of these experiences without traveling across the world?
Absolutely. In fact, I think that families shouldn't try to do what we're doing until they've already had some experience doing smaller, shorter, compact trips and experiencing what it's like to be on the road. When you travel, no matter how prepared you are, something's going to go wrong. You're going to end up at the airport and your bags aren't going to be there, or you're going to get to the airport and they're going to charge you extra, or you're going to need to get two Ubers because a family of five legally can't ride in an Uber that's only built for four. And so everywhere you go, we landed in Paris, France. We had done everything to be ready for this trip. We showed up at the hotel and they said the five-year-old can't sleep in the same bed as the adults. And so they made us rent two hotel rooms that night in downtown Paris. And that's just part of traveling. And so in answer to your question, I think absolutely families should start by spending some time together. And that doesn't mean you have to go international. And even if you decide to go international, it doesn't mean taking 11 or 12 months. Try it out for a couple of weeks or try it out for a weekend and just see how your family does. Build up to that experience.
Yeah, but nonetheless, have experiences, even if they're locally. It doesn't mean you have to travel anywhere. Maybe it's just a staycation as you travel around your local area and find some unique experiences to have as a family. And then that gives you memories to reflect back on. I think that's great. I'm curious to know, as you went through these 12 countries, you obviously, the church is everywhere for the most part. Did you ever run into an area where the local ward just wasn't convenient enough to slip in on Sunday?
Yeah. So of the 12 countries, we formally worshiped, I guess you would call it. We went to a actual sacrament or church meeting in 11 of the 12. The only one we didn't make it to was Myanmar, and that's because the church doesn't have an existence yet in Myanmar. And we actually found that 20 years ago, the church had done some humanitarian aid out in the capital of Myanmar in Yangon, and that there was an address on Facebook for this warehouse where they had done some of this food and aid work out of. And we went and checked that out. And the church has since left that location, so we weren't able to find it. But we went there looking to kind of have that experience and kind of see where the church has reached out and been involved in the community in parts of the world where there are no missionaries, there are no church buildings. Just a second one experience that I thought was kind of neat. So we were in Phuket, Thailand, and Phuket, Thailand's an island that's south of Bangkok, and it used to have two wards out on the island. But when the tsunami came through, it devastated tourism. And so a lot of the members needed to move north to Bangkok in order to find work. And so it left the church with no wards, no branches. And there's just this one group that meets in a hotel on the other side of the island. And we found them on Facebook, drove around to the other side of the island and worshiped with them. And it was an absolutely awesome experience. So they only can rent the place for 2 hours. So they only hold a sacrament meeting and a Sunday school in this particular group. And what they do is instead of assigning church speakers, they just ask the tourists to get up and bear their testimony. And then they have a translator that translates them into Thai. And we were there. There was 30 members of the church there, 15 locals and 15 tourists. And we got to hear, you know, about 10 of the 15 tourist testimonies. And it was just a wonderful experience in what's not your traditional church environment.
Yeah. So did you say, is it an official group then with a group leader?
Well, I don't know how official it is. They call it a group and we found it on Facebook. So, you know, it wasn't on LDS.org. Like if you look for a meeting house finder, it wasn't located on that.
Yeah. Wow. Interesting. But nonetheless, so every week's a testimony meeting.
Yeah. And just really spiritual because you get people from all over the world with all different backgrounds bearing testimony.
Yeah. What an experience. And I'm just curious, as you know, we sort of pride ourselves on a church of our structure, you know, as you can go to any place in the world and recognize maybe the hymns being sung or the format of the meeting. Was that true in your experience?
Yeah, it was absolutely true. All the way down to the point where when I would go out to Elders Quorum, somebody would stand up in front of the lesson and say, who was supposed to give the lesson this week? And I chuckle about that because it's something that we see a lot in the church. And it happened all over the world in about 4 of the 12 countries we were in. Somebody said that in Elders Quorum.
It's a human problem. It's not just an American problem. Huh?
That's right.
Oh my goodness. That's great. And how about the leadership? I would imagine you're attending some places where, you know, the leadership is young or inexperienced and you kind of see them giving their best go on Sunday.
You know, everywhere we go in the church, whether it's here in Phoenix, Arizona or in Salt Lake or across the world, you're going to have leaders that are born natural leaders and they're going to get up and they're going to take control. We also have leaders that are not natural leaders that struggle with some of the leadership perspectives. And you know what? That's okay because the Lord calls and qualifies who he needs to lead his church. Every place we were had great leadership. Every church had a leader that would stand up in front of the congregation, believes in the church, believes in what they were trying to do, and really worked their heart out, put their heart and soul into what they were doing. Now, we went to some wards that started late. We went to some that got out early. We went to some that, you know, you might wrinkle your eyebrow and say, I don't know if I would have done it that way. But the bottom line was everywhere we were, people were trying their hardest to do what was right. And it was just, you could feel the spirit in their effort.
Yeah. And I don't know where you can go where there's not somebody in the congregation thinking, looking at the bishopric and thinking, I don't know if I would have done it that way, right? Everybody just sort of has their approach. So that's great. And what about, you know, you tell in this article that we published on Leading LDS, which obviously we'll link to in the show notes and can be easily found at leadinglds.org. You tell about this experience in Czech Republic where you were asked to sort of step up, but learned a different lesson through that experience.
Yeah, it was actually another one of those, hey, looking back in the rear view, what lesson did I learn? And it was a frustrating moment that turned into probably one of the most powerful lessons that I learned our entire trip. So we were in the Prague ward, and this is kind of a neat experience because Prague has a ward and it's the entire city of over 1 million people that all have just this one ward. I mean, the church isn't that strong. It's brand new out there. And I talk about this in the article about some of the statistics and when it was opened. And Some of the strongest, greatest saints that we met are worshiping in this Prague ward. And there's also a lot of missionary, a lot of foreign support that's over there in this ward. So it's the home of the mission office. And so you got the mission president and you got his wife. And then you've got a number of couple missionaries. You got the assistants to the president. You got the proselyting elders. You got the proselyting sisters. There's a lot of power, leadership, missionary work happening in this ward. And so what happened for us, and part of the story that I tell in on the blog, is we were sitting in the congregation and we lived in Prague for 75 days. So we were able to go to church with this same group for 10 weeks in a row and get to know some of the members and some of the leadership. And during the time that we were there, the church was going through this change. I mean, this identity change, in that they had previously taught gospel principles as the Sunday school lesson. And that was because they were getting a lot more investigators that were English speaking. And so they would bring in a gospel principles lesson for them. But what they started to realize is that more of the visitors that were coming were tourists that were coming over from different parts of the world that spoke English, that were attending this gospel doctrine or this Sunday school class. And they already had the foundations of gospel principles down. Well, during this time, I got asked to speak or to give a lesson on gospel principles, on the creation. And so in my mind, I said, this is great. I'm glad to serve. I said yes immediately. And I started preparing the lesson. I said to myself, there's going to be a lot of people in this class. Let's say 15 to 20 people attending this class. Most of them are going to be missionaries, or most of them are going to be pretty strong foundational members of the church. And so I put in a lot of extra time, if you will, to find some stuff that would take our lesson of the creation more than just a gospel principles, you know, take it to the next level. And so as I did that, I got really excited. I showed up on Sunday, went to the front of the room, and maybe this has happened to you, Kurt, in the past. There was somebody already standing there. Somebody had my spot on the stage.
Oh, wow.
And it was because two of us had been asked to give a lesson. One of us, gospel principles, one of us, gospel doctrine. And so we were both prepared, but the audience, you know, the members of the church that were in there waiting for the lesson were all pretty strong in the church. And so we decided between the two of us that gospel doctrine was probably the right lesson to teach. And so I went to sit down, and this is where the lesson starts to happen. As I went to the back and sat down, the sister missionaries came up and tapped me on the shoulder. I didn't know them. They didn't know me. I mean, we'd seen each other around the church, but we weren't on a name basis just yet. And they said, hey, are you prepared to teach a gospel principles lesson? And I said, of course. They said, we have an investigator here who just wandered in. We don't know his name. We don't know anything about him. He's English speaking. Would you mind coming with us to present this lesson? And I said, of course. What transpired was a truly spiritual, just uplifting experience. As we went back into the room they called the Jesus room, which is filled with windows and pictures of Christ, and we sat in a circle in the middle of this room, and we bore testimony about Joseph Smith. We bore testimony about the foundation of the gospel, about the Book of Mormon. We gave this gentleman, Destin is his name, we gave him a copy of the Book of Mormon. And then we went home. You know, that was the end of the experience. But Kurt, the lesson for me, and why I think you wanted me to kind of speak to this on the podcast, is as I reflected on it, I was very disappointed that I wasn't asked to give my gospel principles lesson to the group that I was supposed to present to. But had I not prepared that lesson, I would have never been asked by the sister missionaries to have this experience. And so the lesson for me is, sometimes Heavenly Father wants you to prepare a lesson so that you can get up and deliver it to the crowd, to the audience, to those you're assigned to teach to. But other times, Heavenly Father wants you to prepare a lesson because it's the only way he can set you on the path to let you do something he needs you to do that wouldn't happen any other way, like what happened to me in Prague. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I love that story. And one, you know, it's so unique to be sort of a visitor in a ward, though you attended for 10 weeks and be asked to participate like that. And then they over-prepare, and there you are standing with a good lesson. But obviously there's another plan in place. And I would imagine you ran into a lot of instances as you went around traveling where you were suddenly asked to step up and share your testimony and present, even if it was in a more casual setting.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to mention to you, that's so exciting. When you go international, people want to hear your testimony. They want to hear your experiences. And so in almost every place that we stopped by, either my wife was asked in Relief Society to teach a lesson or to get up and bear a testimony, or we showed up in Kuala Lumpur in the Klang branch. And I got to tell you, huge shout out to the Klang branch in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia. They are just the neatest group you'll ever meet. We showed up the first Sunday, there was 15 people. We come in with our family of five, you know, we got the group up to 20. They asked my entire family to prepare sacrament talks. And so even the five-year-old got to get up and give a talk in sacrament. And they were just the greatest group of saints. And I just loved being with them and their little small branch in a warehouse building that they met. And that's the kind of experiences that we had all over the place.
Yeah. And I'm just curious, if it's our, if you, Drake, to maybe go through the other countries you haven't mentioned and maybe just give us, I think it's so faith building to hear about these stories, or, and they're not, you know, each one doesn't necessarily have to have a story, but just to hear that the church is functioning in these far off lands. And it's such a testament of, you know, the work is going forward. It's rolling across the world and establishing itself in every continent. What other countries, let me just go down the list here, as far as what stood out to you, as far as your LDS religious experience there as you attended with the saints?
Yeah, you bet. Well, the Philippines, where we started, they are very strong in the church, and they've got 18 or 19 missions now. They've got three or four temples, including one that was just announced, a second temple in Manila. So the church is very strong. Our very first Sunday on the road, we got in the taxi. We had him take us to the chapel. As we pulled around the corner, I knew something was wrong. I mean, I just, you can sense that the church is empty. And as we drove up, we realized the church was empty. Thankfully, and I don't know if this is done always, but thankfully someone had handwritten a note and hung it on the gate that said stake conference today. And so we looked up the address and we had the taxi driver take us. And so our very first experience was going into a stake center that was filled from the front to the back. And, you know, they have the electric fans going. They didn't have any air conditioning in the building. And everybody was kind of waving their fans to keep cooled off, and just had a tremendous experience. That wasn't the last time that we showed up at a church and there was some other program going on, but that was just kind of the experience. We just learned to kind of roll with it. And so that was the Philippines. We were in Singapore for general conference, which made it really easy. And then we headed up to Malaysia, which I already shared that experience. When we went up to Chiang Mai, which is in Thailand, Chiang Mai, Thailand was really cool. Everybody that's English speaking wears a headphone, and then the missionaries translate the meeting for you. And so you can kind of, you sit in the back with your headphones on and you're listening to the meeting, but you can follow along because the missionaries are translating. And I got to tell you, that is truly the gift of tongues. Those missionaries are doing a tremendous job of listening and repeating in English what they're hearing from the pulpit. And they're doing it in such an efficient manner. It's just really neat. And the chapel in Chiang Mai, Thailand is right in downtown, what they call the sacred city of Chiang Mai. It's walled in. So in the 13th century, they built a wall around the main part of the city. And inside there is just a tourist trap. I mean, it's where all the pagodas and all the big Buddhas and where everybody wants to go and take pictures and see. The LDS chapel is right there across the street from the main pagoda in Chiang Mai. And so that was just a tremendous experience. When we were there, there was some missionaries who had served back in the 90s who had come back to put on a musical performance in Chiang Mai. And the whole chapel was filled. People were sitting out in the hallway just to be able to watch these returned missionaries from the United States who flew out there to share their experience and share their, you know, some of the songs that they knew and played. When we went to Cambodia, it was really a very neat experience. We flew in on Sunday morning and our flight landed at 8 a.m. And the ward, they actually have a ward in Siem Reap, which is where Angkor Wat, if you've ever seen like Tomb Raider, where they have the temples that are covered in the trees and, you know, the trees are growing all over. That's Angkor Wat, and Siem Reap is the city that's right there. And they have a ward in Siem Reap and a nice, big, beautiful chapel. And so we looked up this chapel on LDS Tools, found what it looked like. We had a picture of it, and we asked our tuk-tuk driver to take us to this church. and he had no clue what we were talking about. And we showed him the picture and he had no clue. But he said, hey, I'll just drive you around and maybe we'll see it and we'll ask. And so we drive around for 20 minutes and we're stopping on every corner and we're asking people, hey, where's the LDS church? Where's the Mormon church? Where's the Christian church? Anything. And nobody knew what we were talking about. We come around the corner, and I laugh about this because we come around the corner and there is this massive LDS church right on the main street in downtown Siem Reap. I mean, you couldn't miss it. I don't know how we missed it, but it was right there. And we pull in, and this is just a neat experience. Our tuk-tuk driver sees the sign on the chapel that says visitors welcome. And it says, you know, Church of Jesus Christ. He says, are you Christian? And we said, yes. He says, visitors are welcome at your church. And I said, absolutely. Would you like to come in with us? And he said, I can't right now, but maybe someday I will. And we said, sure, thanked him for his time. And, you know, he left. Well, during priesthood meeting, during elders quorum, all of a sudden the door opens, guy walks in. It was our tuk-tuk driver. He came in, sat down next to me, and participated in the end of the lesson. I introduced him to the missionaries. I don't know if he ever joined the church or not because we ended up leaving, but I got to tell you, there's so many cool experiences where people just feel something different when they're in the presence of members of the church and they want to be a part of it. And so that was a cool experience for us in Cambodia while we were there.
Awesome. I love that. One of my best friends from high school served in Cambodia, and you know, it's just people lining up to hear the message, and it's definitely, the work is happening there for sure. Any sense, and I don't, this may be a random question, but it's coming to my mind. Did you get any sense as far as whether you interacted with the youth or just observed the youth in these various countries, their engagement in the gospel? Was there a different feeling, or did it just feel like the typical LDS youth experience just in a different country?
Yeah, it was different from Asia to Europe. So in Asia, there were a lot of primary age kids, and the culture in almost all the countries we were in Asia was kind of let the kids, the primary age kids, kind of run around, let them have good experiences. They bring treats every week. They have break, almost like at school, you would have recess. They would have recess during classes where the kids would go out on the lawn and kind of play around a little bit. That was Asia. When we went to Europe, there was not very many youth members of the church or primary at all. In fact, when we were in Prague, there were my three kids and two other US citizen kids whose parents were now, you know, the family was now living in Prague, but that was the entire primary, was five kids. And we had some of those experiences throughout some of the branches that we went to throughout the UK as well, where my kids, you know, 5, 9, and 11, all three of them were in the same primary class. And a lot of times they were the entire primary. And a couple of times I took my 5-year-old son with me to Elders Quorum, and my wife took my daughters with her to Relief Society because there just wasn't primary. Nobody had prepared to teach the youth. So that was probably a big noticeable something missing out there, is just the youth. There just wasn't as much opportunity because there just wasn't the numbers of youth.
Yeah. Well, nonetheless, you know, that the experience in whole is just a remarkable one. And I bet you haven't regretted it for a minute, even though maybe there's some difficulties along the way.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I think, you know, going back to your question earlier is, you know, do we have to, as members of the church, pack up our family and go overseas to have these experiences? And the answer is absolutely not. I mean, there are branches and wards and cool experiences everywhere. And prior to us leaving internationally, we spent a month and a half traveling locally, you know, traveling domestically. And we started out in San Jose, California. We've been to church in Newport Beach, California, and across through Utah and down through St. George, Arizona. And everywhere we go, there's magic and saints and lessons and love and the gospel everywhere.
Nice. And I do have a few more questions for you, but where can people, if they want to check out your podcast, where should they go and connect with you?
Yeah, everything is easy to find. I'm just over on jakeacarlson.com. That's where my podcast, my email address, all my social media is. It's just the easiest way to find me, jakeacarlson.com.
Nice. And any big future plans for the podcast, or you're just finding more and more interesting people to talk to? And then obviously the monologue episode that'll be posted.
Yeah. What's really coming there's some exciting stuff coming down the pike here. And I'm not going to share names, but I will tell you that part of modern leadership, we've been doing a monthly book club where we take books that I've been fascinated by that I've wanted to read and read them and review them on the website and then review them on the podcast. And what we started to be able to do is get the author of these books on the podcast to come and talk about their book. And we've had, in the past, we've had Whitney Johnson, who's a member of the church. Yeah. She wrote the book Disrupt Yourself on the show. And coming forward, we have some big name authors coming on. I'm just excited about that opportunity.
Awesome. Well, you definitely need to connect us with Whitney. She's one that's been on my radar to get on the Leading LDS podcast because she's definitely made a name for herself in the leadership world. So, and you mentioned books, you know, and that's a great idea. Something I've wanted to put more attention on in the Leading LDS world is there's so many great leadership books out there. You know, if a bishop or Relief Society president came to you and said, "Hey, I want to be a better leader," what secular books would you recommend I read? Any come to mind that you would recommend?
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, I'm a voracious reader, and so I look at, you know, Amazon has millions of books, and how do you identify what books will take you down the path and get you excited? A lot of what I've been reading lately stems around accountability and really putting together processes and systems. And a book that I just recently read that's really resonated with me, Anders Ericsson, he's a professor of psychology at Florida State University. He wrote a book called Peak, Expert Secrets or Secrets to Expert Performance. He spent 30 years studying performance. And if you've heard Malcolm Gladwell writes about the 10,000 hour rule, mm-hmm. where he says, you know, if you want to be an expert at anything, you have to study it out. You have to work on it, practice it for 10,000 hours. Are you familiar with that?
Yeah, absolutely.
Uh-huh. Okay. He got that from Anders Ericsson's first book. And in this second book, Anders Ericsson says, Malcolm Gladwell got it wrong. There is no 10,000 hour rule. And so when I read that, you know, of course, I love Malcolm Gladwell. I've read everything that he's ever written. And yeah, I love the 10,000 hour rule. But to read his interpretation of what Malcolm Gladwell misinterpreted, I thought was tremendous. So that would be just one. I think, you know, Start With Why by Simon Sinek is always a great one. And then my favorite book of all time is Shane Snow. And I don't know, have you heard of Shane Snow?
That does sound familiar. I think I've heard some interviews about it with him.
Okay, you're going to love this. So he went to BYU, Idaho, or Ricks College at the time. And he writes, the very first chapter is called Bored Mormons. And so it's not an LDS book, and it's not an LDS leadership book. In fact, it's called Smart Cuts, How Innovators, Icons, and, I can't remember, how they shortcut success. And he calls smart cuts are basically shortcuts with integrity. And he basically talks about how we can, you know, change the paradigm, change thinking. And it's absolutely the best book I think's ever written on business, written by a guy who went to BYU, Idaho, and starts with Bored Mormons. I mean, how else can we not love that?
So does he have a LDS background, or he just happened to land in BYU, Idaho?
I don't know what his background is, if he just happened to land there. I don't know a whole lot about him, and I couldn't find in doing my research.
Yeah.
But I would tell you that nothing in the book counters what we teach and that, but I don't know if he is LDS or not.
We'll have to chase him down and talk about Bored Mormons and see what we can learn and not make us so bored, I guess. So.
Oh, you're going to love it. The chapter is fantastic.
Awesome. Well, Drake, this has been so fun to hear about your travels and the experiences. You know, maybe someday I'll find myself across the world with my family, and it's definitely something I'd love to do. But if not, you know, definitely look each day and each week for experiences that can create memories to reflect back on and teach life lessons. I think that's such a remarkable way to do that and to educate your family as you go forward. As you look back on that experience and really your experience throughout the church as you've led or as you've experienced different cultures of leading, how has that experience and others made you a better disciple or follower of Jesus Christ?
You know, putting yourself in experiences that are uncomfortable, putting yourself in opportunities to learn and grow, I think helps you relate to other people. And I believe that the church is founded on this principle of service, about finding joy through helping other people by going out and doing the best you can within your community, within your family, within your ward, within your zone of influence, in that area of influence. And I think that by traveling and by experiencing other cultures, other areas of the church, I think it really helps you to understand there's opportunities to serve everywhere around you and to go and seek them out.
That concludes my interview with Jake Carlson. Bless his heart, the world traveler. I encourage you to go check out his Modern Leadership podcast. I'm subscribed and love. I'm always interested to see who he's got on next and who he's interviewing and getting his point of view on leadership. Another good leadership podcast to add to your library of audio podcasts. If you know of anybody else that I should interview, I'd love to hear from you. Go to leadinglds.org/contact. There you'll find our contact page. Submit your message, your suggestion, who I should reach out to. And if you could connect us, that would make it even better. But we're looking for prolific leaders who really have a unique perspective, or authors or researchers or anybody in the leadership world that could add value to the Leading LDS audience. As always, all we ask is $1 a month for the content that we create here at Leading LDS. And most importantly, become a core leader. Let's set it and forget it. Be a subscribing leader and you'll become a core leader, which gives you access to our library of webinars and additional content. We're actually working on a separate podcast stream, podcast feed that core leaders can subscribe to, and you will get additional content that will, and you get additional content that will bless your leadership experience and help you become a more able leader in the LDS church. So to become a core leader, go to leadinglds.org and hit the donate button, and there you'll join the team. As always, be a leader and not a calling.
It came as a result of the position of leadership which was imposed upon us by the God of heaven, who brought forth a restoration of the gospel of Jesus Christ. And when the declaration was made concerning the only true and living church upon the face of the earth, we were immediately put in a position of loneliness, the loneliness of leadership, from which we cannot shrink nor run away, and to which we must face up with boldness and courage and ability.